You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 51 of Take a Bow Podcast. Oh, my goodness. I'm your host, Eli Tokash. I am so excited to be with you all this week. We have such an exciting episode lined up for us today. We have a bit of a new, kind of keeping with this new theme of introducing new fields of the entertainment industry as a whole. We have Bowen Yang, who is currently starring in SNL, being a superstar. You may know him most recently, like one of the more famous skits that he's done was The Iceberg Who Sunk the Titanic. It was everything that you wanted to be. It was absolutely comic genius. So I can't wait to share everything with you all this week about SNL and kind of more of the TV and film side of the industry while also fangirling over Broadway. And it's just it's a great interview, and it was going to be the 50th episode, but due to scheduling with everything opening back up, it's getting harder to schedule stuff. So things happen. So speaking of things opening up, let's talk about what is happening. Okay, the tickets for Broadway shows are like available. It's actually like hitting. It's happening. And we're going to be blessed with a start from Hamilton, Lion King, and Wicked all on the same day, September 14th. And then after that, as I kind of expected, I don't know if it was like everything like business-wide or anything, but as expected, for me, I'm going to say the other shows are going to be opening at scattered dates. So there won't be like a full official day of like, oh, Broadway is fully reopening. Let's celebrate. It's all kind of just going to be happening at different times and at everybody's own pace and time for people that need to, you know, do rehearsals and do some tech things and need to do auditions and stuff like that. So really, it's just going to depend on show to show. But thankfully, we have many shows that have announced their return as well of the openings and the dates. So I'm going to read most of them off right now. So as I said, we're going to be blessed with Hamilton, Lion King, Wicked, and also Chicago, September 14th, which are shows that like have been on Broadway for quite some time. And they're all kind of just like solidified and they're like set. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Dear Evan Hansen opens up at that date as well, but there has not been an announcement about the date of Dear Evan Hansen's reopening, so stay tuned there. And then following that will be Six, which previews will begin on September 17th, so they'll start performing September 17th, and then after that, Come From Away on September 21st, Aladdin September 28th, Tina October 8th, and Caroline or Change October 8th, Ain't Too Proud October 16th. Jagged Little Pill and Mrs. Doubtfire will be starting performances October 21st. Obviously, Jagged Little Pill is already opened. Doubtfire is not quite yet. So those will be their start of their previews and they will open December 5th. So interestingly enough, it's going to be about a month and a half of previews, which is kind of rare, but amazing for them. The Phantom of the Opera will be October 22nd, Diana December 1st. Obviously, they have that little Netflix release before then. MJ, the Michael Jackson musical, December 6th, Company, December 20th, and The Music Man, December 20th. So right now, that's 18 Broadway shows that have scheduled their opening dates. And obviously, hopefully, we'll have more information of the other shows who have yet to announce all very shortly because, you know, things are happening and tickets are already on sale, which, by the way, go try and get your tickets now because, I mean, granted, Broadway shows will always be pretty expensive, but right now they're kind of at reasonable prices. They're like face value right now, so it's not like you're going to be going through a seller or anything like that on like StubHub or anything like that. It's just face value, and you can get some pretty good deals. You can get a ticket for what they are actually going for and not someone trying to make money off of them. So that's always a good thing. So go check those out. There's lots of tickets available. I will be getting my tickets very soon. I'm very excited about it. And by the way, I'm so curious to know what everyone's first Broadway show is going to be when it reopens, but I'm also curious to see what mine is because I still haven't made the decision yet. I was debating between Mrs. Doubtfire and Company, but now that like everyone's kind of announcing their dates of reopening at different times, I feel like I'm just going to see whatever is available at whatever date, like the nearest date as possible. Probably not like Hamilton and Wicked and all of those because those are already sold out and super expensive. So we'll see how it goes. And I'll obviously like keep you all updated and I can't wait. So if you already bought your tickets and everything like that, post it on Instagram if you haven't already, and tag me. I'm so excited to learn what show everyone is looking forward to when Broadway reopens. So yeah, that is Broadway. But with that being said, there have been off-Broadway shows. Everyone's talking about, oh, what's going on with that? There hasn't been much talk about that. Well, actually, their Broadway shows have only three Broadway shows have announced that they're going to be reopening and at what date. And those three shows are Little Shop of Horrors on September 21st, The Play That Goes Wrong on October 15th, and Jersey Boys on November 15th. More are expected to come to be announced soon with either that they are opening or that they will not be. I assume Trevor will be opening for those of you who are like Trevor fans and are interested in seeing that show. They have not released a date yet, so when that does happen, when all of these shows really release dates, I'll obviously keep you all updated on that because it's exciting times. So get tickets now, and something that you should also be getting now is 20% off your new favorite water bottle with the code ELI20 at owalalife.com. I promise you guys this will be your new favorite water bottle. You will drink more water than you ever have before, and I'm not even trying to be like an ad read about it right now. I'm just like talking about my own personal experience. Get 20% off. And today, when you're listening to this on Thursday, is the last day to enter the giveaway on the Take About Instagram, where we are giving away a free Owala water bottle, as well as some Take About merchandise and stickers. So go check that out at the Take About Instagram. It's Take About Podcast, and it's some great things going on. And obviously, we post all of the great things and episode highlights and all of that. So go follow our Instagram while you're at it. But with this all being said of buying things now and these tickets, while we're looking at tickets, I've been looking at a lot of them. I can't decide like where I want to sit when I do go back to reopening, but I know it's going to be somewhere in the house. What does that mean? Oh my goodness. Let's turn it over to the drama dictionary. I'm so cheesy. I'm so sorry, but I loved it. The drama dictionary word of the week is house. So obviously like it's not like a house, like we're like you're living in a house if you're listening to this probably, or an apartment. I don't know. But like a house, right? So this is like the term that theater people use as the audience. So like the section, of course, of the stage is called the stage where like we perform on, but then the house is where all the audience members sit. So we've talked before, I think, of house right and house left, and it's stage right and stage left, and how those flop when depending on what side of the theater you are on or what side you're facing or whatever it may be. But yes, the house is the entire basically audience section of a theater. So that includes the orchestra, which is the lower level. That includes the mezzanine and orchestra as well, which are like the higher levels and everything like that. So it's basically like a house for the audience. And that's going to be like the little house that we perform to. So if you didn't know that, now you know. So go get a ticket to whatever show that you want to see. Go get a ticket to sit in the house at a Broadway show when Broadway reopens sometime in like September, October, November, or December. You're welcome. Love it. House is the word of the week. And enough with this stuff, enough with the fun and games. Let's turn it over to one of the greatest Take About interviews that we've ever had. It's so insightful and hilarious because it's Bowen Yang, and I had a great time. So let's turn it over to Bowen Yang. Bowen Yang, curtain up. Okay, everyone. So we have a fierce star on the show this week. This comedy, acting, and literally just like a legend of everything became the first Chinese American, the third openly gay male, and fourth ever cast member of Asian descent on SNL. He is currently doing double duty, also being a star in Nora from Queens as Edmund. So he's doing all the things, and we're so excited to have him this week. So welcome to Take a Bow, Bowen Yang.
Hi, Eli. Thank you for that intro.
Oh my God, this is everything that I ever wanted. You're so welcome. I'm obsessed with the intros. I love hyping people up, and I feel like it's a great time to do that.
It is.
Yeah, it's a great time. So let's talk about this whole journey that you've taken and that we're all watching you on.
But that you and I have been, I thought you were going to say that this journey that you and I have been on, because we've worked with each other.
We have worked with each other, and it's in this stupidest show called John Glazer Loves Gear.
It's a pretty dumb show, but we love it.
It's amazing. It's everything that you want. And especially like with you as like Spurt, which is like the sports expert, and yes, just like it's iconic. So it's amazing and everything that you want. Before we get into all of this, let's start at like the beginning. Like why are we doing this? Like why are we here? What got you into like comedy, theater, movies, all of that stuff?
The place it started, I guess, was when I first moved to the U.S. I was growing up in Canada, in Montreal, where like the comedy there, the French Canadian sensibility for comedy is like wacky. It's like so strange. But like growing up, it was like watching like Mr. Bean with my parents because we didn't have cable, and so like that was like my like exposure. But then like we would like, there's this festival in Montreal called Just for Laughs, and we would go, and it like, you know, takes over the whole city, and then we would go downtown and just like walk around, and there would be like, you know, outdoor stages where there'd be free comedy shows, and I'd always be like, oh my God, that just looks so fun. But that was like the first like seedling that was planted in my brain that I was like, ooh, is that something I want to do? Right. And then we moved to the US, and then like, I mean, I just went to different schools. I kept like just changing schools growing up, and then, but there was something that happened, especially when I moved from, you know, Quebec to Colorado, Aurora, Colorado, and Denver. Where like you just had to adapt, and then the way that you ingratiate yourself in like a new environment is just by like trying to like be like a clown or something, or just be like, you know, like just, you know, just making people laugh was just like the way that like I like tried to make friends. I don't know like how successful I was, but but it was this identity that people like sort of like kind of threw at me. Like by like the first month I was in the US, they were like, oh, Bowen, like I had cheered up enough girls who were crying at recess in the fourth grade for people to be like, Bowen, you're funny. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm funny. And like I really ran with it.
Yes.
And then like really got into like Mad TV, which was this old sketch show back in the day, and SNL. And then there'd be this like block like where I would watch like Seinfeld and The Simpsons and like all these like syndicated sitcoms.
Right.
And that was sort of like my way in. Yeah.
Yes. Period. All the iconic comedy shows of period. Our generation. Well, I guess like, you know, timeless. They're like timeless TV. So like it's incredible. But like, talk to me. Like, you went to NYU in like the chemistry department. Like,
yeah.
Like, what was that like? And then like, how do you go from like doing that and then being like, oh, I want to be a performer. I don't want to do this.
It was all, I mean, the chemistry thing was kind of like a ruse because, I mean, in high school, I had this teacher who was my calculus teacher, who was also an assistant director at this improv theater downtown in Denver.
Oh my God.
And he sponsored the improv group. So there was like the drama club in high school and like all the kids like were hung out in drama club. But then like if you were like really funny and like really cool, you were part of the improv group, which like funneled in from the drama club. And so there was always...
And of course you were part of the cool group, right? In the improv group?
I mean, I auditioned the first 2 years and I didn't get in. And then finally my junior and senior year, I got in.
Of course.
But it was like such a fight. And then, but then that's when I kind of got obsessed with like comedic performance. And then like, it, like that was like my drive to like go to college. I didn't know what I was going to major in. Then I watched enough Grey's Anatomy to be like, I guess I could be a doctor. That looks fun. I mean, I truly like had no like actual concept of like what it meant, but I was like, you know what? I'm good at science, kind of, and it's something that'll make my parents happy because they're raising an eyebrow at me liking improv this much. Like,
right?
I would go like in high school. I would go downtown to perform every now and then, and they'd be like, Bowen, like this is kind of like taking up a lot of your time. Like, more like you should be, you know, just trying to like focus on like getting into college or just like doing stuff in college. And I was like, sure. But then like when I would visit colleges, I'd like always ask them like, do you have an improv group here? Do you have like a comedy group here? And then I ended up going to NYU. And then there was an improv group there that I really liked that I was like stalking on the internet in like Facebook days. I would stalk them like right before I went to NYU in the spring before I went. And then auditioned and then was on the improv group, but then everyone else was a Tisch kid at NYU.
Right.
I mean, every other kid in the improv and the sketch group at NYU were like Tisch kids. But I was just, you know, this like odd person coming in from the chemistry department being like, hey, I like it comedy too. So yeah, that was it. But then the chemistry thing was like me sort of delaying, like kind of like trying to like take cover behind like academics again. Uh-huh. And like me being like, I don't actually want to pursue, I mean, lying and telling people, no, this, I think comedy is just a hobby and I don't think I want to, you know, go through with it after college. But then, I mean, I secretly did. And then I graduated with And then I graduated with this chemistry degree and then didn't really, and then afterwards was like, oh, I can't go to med school. I was taking my MCAT, which is this exam you're supposed to take to like help you get into like, that just like is determines how which med schools you get into. And I took the MCAT for the second time after I graduated college, and then I got to the short answer portion, and then I remember this interview that Steve Carell did where there was a time where after he graduated college he was thinking about going to law school because he was kind of struggling as an actor himself, and then he got to the essay portion of the law school application and he was like, I can't do this.
Right.
And then I like had that, that quote like immediately came to me as I was taking this MCAT and I was like, I can't do this. Like Steve Carell like took over my brain and I was just like, I can't follow through. So then I avoided my test score and then I left and I was like, I think I'm going to try. And I told my parents and they were very confused, but I was like, I think I'm going to try and do this comedy thing and take classes and try to just book stuff here and there on TV, like little under fives, like get into SAT. And then like, they'll be like, what are you going to do about health insurance? I was like, well, I got to like get enough jobs to like, you know, just to get health insurance or whatever. And so that was it. Yeah.
Wow. We love that journey for you. That's so fun and like so unique that like, I don't even know. Like chemistry, I could not. We love a smart actor.
I don't know if I'm smart.
If you're good at science, I consider you smart.
Okay.
Oh my God, this is incredible. And of course, Steve Carell. Like, who's not inspired by Steve Carell? Everyone's inspired by Steve Carell. Do you have like a favorite like comedian who you like kind of like is a role model for you?
I mean, growing up, it was a lot of. It was a lot of like Margaret Cho, like as a person, I was like, I couldn't believe like who she was and like what kind of joke she was telling on stage. She's this like stand-up comedian who like had like a big like gay audience, and she talked about, you know, she did impressions of her mom, she did impressions of her dad. she would always talk about, you know, like if she had a kid, she would want him to be gay and all this stuff. And it was like at the time, like this is like, you know, like 15, 20 years ago, like it just seemed like no one else was kind of talking about things in that way. And it just felt really kind of revolutionary. And then it was her, it was, you know, I mean, my era of SNL when I was growing up was like Will Ferrell and Tina Fey and Molly Shannon and Maya Rudolph and Anna Gasteyer, Rachel Dratch, Amy Poehler. It was like that era. And like, I really took to that. And then in high school, it was like Bill Hader, Kristen Wiig, Andy Samberg. So like, I grew up with like a really, really crazy stretch of SNL. And I was like, but I never thought to myself, like, I'm going to be on that show. I was just like, oh, I'm obsessed with this show. And I think I will just be a fan for the rest of my life. Because like, I don't ever see myself, like, I don't know that someone like me would ever be on that show or what they would do and like how they would fit in with the rest of the sensibility of the show. And then that was like, it was like that era of SNL was like people I really idolized. And then by the time I got to high school, that was when The Office actually came out. And then I was obsessed with The Office. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then and then like Sarah Silverman too is a stand, like back in the day, she was like really kind of like putting out such good stand up, and she still does. But I mean, that was a time when I was like, wow, like there's this like irreverence and there's this like sexuality in terms of her, this woman, this like, you know, woman who's like presenting herself as like a cute Jewish girl who like was talking about like all these like crazy, really funny things that were like a little outre, a little dirty, a little, you know, controversial. So I mean, all of that, that's like all like sort of funneled in.
Down. Absolutely. So like, what did you do to like, obviously you said like you made the decision and you were like, okay, I want to do this as a comedian and actor and whatever. Mm-hmm. So like, you didn't like have those, like you're not coming from like the Tisch School of the Arts or anything mm-hmm. like that. So like, what did you do to like get your name out there? And like, you did a lot of live performances and stuff like that. Is that kind of how you got your name out there?
Yeah. And like, I think that was like the best experience too, because like even I was in a sketch group with a lot of kids from Tisch after I graduated. Mm-hmm. And even for them, it was like, oh, we're like, this is like new for us. Like us like going to like doing these live shows at these comedy theaters in the city. This was like a new experience. I mean, we were all learning together. It wasn't like anyone had a leg up on anybody. Mm. If anything, like I was coming from like an improv background where I was kind of used to the idea of just like being like playing as part of a team, as part of a unit. And like, that was very like comfortable for me. But then all of us were kind of like taking classes after college. And at the time it was UCB, like UCB was kind of like a big dog with their curriculum, and just everyone wanted to like get on the house teams there. And
yeah,
I kept auditioning year after year to be on their house teams. I never got on.
Oh no.
Well, it was at the time, it was this thing where it was like the most important, it was an attainable goal for people, right? It was like, you take enough classes at UCB and then you're eligible to audition for the house teams, which gets you noticed by, you know, management, like it gets you representation, it gets you booked for stuff, it gets you auditions. So it felt like that was like a ladder, like a rung on the ladder that was within reach, and everyone kind of tried to like zero in on that. And then it was just a lot of people, and it was very competitive, and there just wasn't room for me, or I just didn't really do the auditions that well. And so I ended up just, I kept doing these shows with the sketch group I was in. Mm. And then by the time I had like been like rejected enough times from UCB, I was like, let me try and like, there's this like new scene that's happening in Brooklyn that's like independent shows, like people going up on stage, either they're doing stand-up or they're doing an original character, and it's just them on stage alone in like the basement of a bar, or like this like old, like this like DIY space, or like all these different like spaces. And so and so then that's, I kind of like gravitated towards that. And then at that point I met a lot of people, and a lot of them happened to be queer. And I was just like, oh, there's like, maybe there's like a fun way to like get all the get all the queers together and like do shows. And then like, I would like, you know, like my friends and I would just like produce things where everyone would just be part of the same and in the same like lineup and all that. And then that was like where like community started to like actually be like built. And
right.
You would see a lot of the same people and you would just become friends and you would check in with each other and you would write together or do all these things. And then that happened at the same time that I was like, I got like a couple, like one or two managers and I bounced around between managers, but then I would like book things every now and then, booked Broad City, booked like High Maintenance. And then I booked, booked John Glazer Loves Gear. And that's where we met. Yes. So it was very slow, gradual, you know, thing.
Amazing. So wait, so like, when you do the stand-up shows, like, do you like prefer to kind of just like go in and improvise because that's kind of your background, or do you write it before?
No, I mean, like, I would write like a stretch. I wasn't even that good at stand-up. I would normally just do like bits, like with like a slideshow, or like okay. I would do like some character-y things. Mm-hmm. I would do. But then I still, my favorite thing to do was still just like group shows where like we would do like, you know, a staged adaptation of an episode of like Sex and the City or something with a bunch of like gay comedians or like dumb conceptual, stupid conceptual things like that. And and then like my friend Matt Rogers and I would do a lot of stuff together. He hosts Lost Culturistas, and then he and I like would like do really dumb bits as like, you know, dirty like sewer rat like lip sync artists or something like that. And then it was just about like I always preferred doing something on stage with someone else.
Okay.
Whether it was just one person or like, you know, seven. That was like that was the only difference. That's why I wasn't like totally going in as like with like the stand-up mentality, because for a lot of stand-ups, for club comics especially, it's like you're doing like, you know, three shows a night. Every night in the week, you're going to clubs, you're like running around and like doing all that. And like, that just like didn't seem like super sustainable for me, because I was like working this like long day job, like a 9-to-5. And then by the end of the day, I was so tired, but I was like, I guess I can rally for one show. So I would do like three shows a week at most. And that is not a lot at all. Mm-mm. But there's some comedians who would like do like, yeah, like 10 shows a week or,
oh my God.
You know, it was crazy. So I was just I found my pocket pretty quickly, and then I just kind of stayed there.
Uh-huh.
But then that was still very, it was still a very educational thing where I learned so much even from just that kind of place. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so cool. I love that. As an actor, I mean, obviously, like, I'm no comedian by any means. But like, it's so much easier just to have that extra person there and kind of like feed off of them, right?
Of course.
You love like the whole like team, I guess, aspect of what we do in performing.
Yes.
So totally understand that. And now you kind of have like one big team at SNL, which, by the way, oh my God, I'm obsessed. I think I like heard or read somewhere that like you were in high school, you were like, I guess like nominated or like maybe in the yearbook, likely to be on SNL. And look where we are today. Oh my God. That's so crazy. Funny. And just the fact that like you were such a huge fan of the show and everything. So you got to SNL, right? And you started out as like a writer, right?
What is
that experience like? What is it like to be in like a writing room at SNL and like kind of figuring it out as far as like which actors do which scene or
right
everything like that? Like, how does it all work?
It's really interesting. Like, it kind of wasn't anything that I expected it to be, because I mean, you would hear all these legends like from like SNL in the past, where it'd be like, it's such a crazy boys club, and everyone's doing cocaine, and everyone's like doing all these things. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I in for? But you get there, and then it's like a lot of like really like thoughtful, quiet people who like, you know, are just like trying to figure and even that was like a team sort of.
Yeah.
There was a team mentality there where like, you know, you find people you collaborate with well, but then after the sketches get picked for dress rehearsal on Wednesday night, Thursday and Friday, you're at rewrite tables for the sketches that are picked, and you're just kind of sitting there with some other writers, and you're just going through each sketch one by one throughout the entire day, just trying to figure out line by line, page by page, like, how do you make this better? And then it's like everyone like doing like surgery on the same thing, and everyone kind of like trying to like collectively make something as good as possible. And like that was kind of really nice. And like, I think that also like fed into like appealed to my like teamwork sensibility mentality thing. And so that was really interesting. And then, you know, and then being a writer there, like, even for just a year, I learned so much. And I wasn't sure, because I auditioned a few times, and then they hired me as a writer. And then I called one of my friends who's a writer there already. I was like, do you think I should take the job? And he was like, yes, because I have already learned so much, and it's opened so many doors for me. And I was like, okay, great. And then, yeah, I really did learn so much in that first season to writing there. Because then by the time I got moved to the cast, like, I knew how the show worked. I knew where to go, who to talk to. If an idea, you know, got picked to go to the show on Saturday, I was like, I knew what my resources were. And like, if you're, it takes a year no matter what, no matter who you are, whether you're on the cast or if you're a writer or if you're in the costume department or if you're in makeup, it's like, it takes a year to just get used to how crazy the show is, just in terms of the pace of it and the workload and all that. So I'm really grateful that I had that season.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So wait, did you mention that, like, you auditioned as, like, a writer, or you were just, like, auditioning as a cast member and then you got hired to be a writer?
I auditioned to hopefully be in the cast, but okay. Because I had submitted a writing packet to be a writer in the past, and they were all really bad.
Oh.
So I was like, I'm not going to do that. And then, at one point, my manager at the time, 4 years ago, was like, hey, do you want to submit a tape for SNL? I was like, yeah, sure. I'll do it, because they would never, but it'll be like as a lark, because they'll never hire like a femme gay Asian guy. I was like, there's no lane for that. Like, why would they ever do that? And so I was like, let me just have fun with this tape. And so I put together a 5-minute tape. Most of it I had written completely completely new. Because normally, like, for a lot of sketch actors, like, they're putting together like sketch characters that they've performed on stage, and they know it's good and they know it gets laughs.
Sure.
I was starting kind of with a blank slate, and I was just like, I don't have like stock characters. What am I gonna do? So I just wrote like 5 minutes of new stuff, did it, put it on tape, submitted it, thinking, okay, whatever. I'm glad I did that exercise. Like, I'm glad I pushed myself. I don't think anything's gonna come of this, but let me just send it out. And then I heard back, well, they want you to perform on live at UCB in front of an audience, and producers are going to be there. I was like, oh, that's funny. Okay, sure. I'll do it. Why not? It'll go over terribly. And I did it. And then that was fun, and it kind of went over well. And I was like, interesting. And then at that point, they were like, you should come and screen test in front of Lauren. And I was like, what? I kept clearing every stage in a way that I was just like, this doesn't make any sense. And then this is 2017. I think this is right around the time. I think this was right around the time that I was doing. Oh, no. Because I did that. And then I got to the final meeting with Lauren after the screen test. And I think he was so checked out, because it was the end of the day and I was the last person he saw.
Right.
And he was just like, where are you from? I was like, oh, I grew up in Denver, but I lived in Montreal. And he was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, bye. And like, I truly like, was like, I don't think I registered to him. And so I left being like, I didn't get the job, whatever. So then I didn't get it. So wow. Then I'm licking my wounds from like, you know, October to January.
Yeah.
October of 2017 to January of 2018, being like, oh God, I suck. And then at that point I booked John Glazer.
Uh-huh.
And then in March, because we shot that like in the winter and spring of 2018, right?
Yeah. Bizarre.
It was bizarre. But then by March 2018, right as I was rapping for John Glazer, I got new management and I got a call being like, they want you to come in and screen test again. Uh-huh. With 5 minutes of new stuff.
Oh my gosh.
For SNL, and because they might do a mid-season hire. Sometimes they do that. I was like, oh, interesting. And then at that point, me and Matt had also gotten a call to screen test.
Oh my God, no way.
I know. So the completely separately, like they were like, oh, we like that Matt Rogers guy, because they had seen him do shows at UCB. And he had submitted a tape and it was really funny. And so then he and I like auditioned like separately, but together, you know, like we were in the same day. And we were both like, oh my God, like this would be a dream come true if like,
right?
You know, two best friends got it together. And then we both did it. We both did well. And then they were like, we're not going to hire anybody from this round, but we're going to bring you guys back in August to audition for the new season. I was like, okay, great. So then I had whole summer to like write new stuff. And then me and Matt were just like running it for like, over like a month of just like reworking it.
Yeah.
Our audition sets. And then we did it end of August, early September. We went back into audition. And then what happened was I got to the last Lauren meeting, and this time he remembered me, but Matt didn't move on. And so it was just this weird thing of like, oh, my best friend didn't get this.
Right.
This is so strange. And it was painful, and he, you know, was happy for me, but he was also very disappointed. And then that was a crazy time, because I got to the Lauren meeting. I think the meeting went well. And then I get the call like, you know, Bowen's not going to be on the cast, but we do want to hire him as a writer. And I was like, you know what? Sure, I'll take it.
Oh my God.
I just quit my day job. I was like, I'll take it. And I'd wanted, you know, I loved SNL for so long, and I wanted just any job in comedy that was like that. And so then I wrote there for a season, but then that was just a period between me and Matt where we really had to like talk out like how we were feeling and move through it. And then now we're on the other side, and you know, he's doing great, and we're both like really happy for the other person. But it was a really tough period where we were like not sure like what it was going to be. So yeah, that's basically it. That was the process.
Wow, that's crazy. This industry is like so bizarre, especially like because all the time you're going up, like up against, like it's such a bad thing to say, but like
no, you are, yeah,
yeah, like you're friends, and it's like that's the one of the hardest things about it, and it just like kind of pins you guys against each other in a way, but
in
like
a way,
still
yeah.
being super supportive. And like honestly, like the way I look at it is like, if they're not gonna take me, they better take my best friend, right? Like
sure, yeah.
So that's like, I guess it's like a win-win in a way. But yeah, this process, man, this is so intense, that this everything that you kind of went through. And like when they asked you to be like a writer, did you ever think that it would open the possibility of you being a cast member?
Maybe, but I was like, you know, I just want to do this job well. I want to do the job that they've asked me to do well. And I don't, and I like truly throughout the entire season, I was like, the job is so stressful that I didn't even have time to think about like, oh gosh, wouldn't it be so great if I was on the cast? It was truly just like, oh, I'm learning the ropes so quickly, and it's so intense and overwhelming. That wasn't really on my mind. But yeah, I mean, like, I feel like it's not quite as bad as like a Broadway, you know, audition process too, right? Like, does it sound like about the same? I mean, I feel like Broadway auditions are like a whole other beast.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, but it also like depends on like the project like itself,
sure.
And like what you're doing. Like if you're going in
for like Matilda in Matilda, you're going to go through like 11 auditions in one round, you know, like it's just like madness. But like if you're in like, honestly, like any role, you'll have like a minimum of at least like 4 auditions. So like per time. And that's if you like continue, of course, like, you know, you go through that, obviously that first round and then hopefully you like continue. But yeah, it ranges from like 4 auditions to like, you could go to like 24 because they have to do like dance calls and then they have to do like music rehearsal and then they have to do the like the sides and the lines and everything like that and test your acting ability. Like it's just like all the different
facets.
It's
so hard.
It's so hard. And it's so hard to like go so far to like be let down, you know? And like I'm sure like you experienced that with like that first set of auditions going all the way to meeting Lauren and then kind of just like, oh, well now
I'm
what?
Sure, yeah.
Right? So like it's kind of like it's totally like that 100%.
But even 4 times, which is like the minimum for Broadway, like but like the thing that I still can't believe is like every single time, like I screen tested 4 times total and then there were 2 auditions, quote unquote, to get up to the point of screen testing. Like each of those stages felt so high stakes.
It
felt like this is it. Like, I better nail it or else I'm not going to get it. And like, it just, it really kind of puts you in a crazy making place in your head where you're like, I have to get this right. And then like, I don't know. And like, people love to make fun of actors all the time.
Right.
For like how, like, whatever, like just frivolous we are. I don't know. Cause it's like, they see us. It's like you're seen. And so it's like easy to make fun of us because it's like, we're like in front of them. And it's like, there's someone that they don't know. And so it just, whatever. So anyway, I can go on and on about this. It's ridiculous. Cancel them. But it's such a demanding thing to like,
yeah,
I'm not like saying like, woe is us, like boo hoo, where it's so hard to be an actor, but it is like psychologically such a wild thing to put yourself through.
Oh my God. I'm currently doing a whole public policy paper for my senior year on mental illness or mental health in the entertainment industry because of like everything that like we've mentioned, like as far as like going up against your best friends and feeling like, you know, like you meet these, it's like when your career and your personal life meets, like it's just like it gets a lot. And you know, like at the end of the day, we're just the same people as you and the chemistry major at NYU and lawyer and like all of these other places. So like, I don't know, I never understood like why people just like want to hurt people, but like whatever, that's a whole nother conversation.
It is. That's amazing that you're writing that though.
Yeah, I mean like listen, there needs to be something, like you know, you just said it, like it's hard in this industry to be someone especially like in a tier that you're in because you have even more eyes on you and like you're like, it's just like the more eyes on you, it's like the more difficult it becomes. And like there's little to no resources for especially that are geared toward people of our like are like the creative minds and everything like that. So like I don't know, it's really depressing that there's like there are resources, but like at the end of the day no one really understands, I guess, unless you're like in the industry and like in this field and going through what another person's going through. So it's just like there just needs to be like more research, more education, more resources, more everything for everyone. But
it should just be specifically people in this industry. It should be as standard as like being in therapy, let's say,
right?
It should be as standard as like having a headshot. It's like it should be like
exactly
something on everyone's, you know, and everyone's sort of like professional sort of like environment.
Right.
It's like you have that. Yeah.
And like, 100%. I'm still a kid. So like, I never really like understood the whole like healthcare system and everything like that. Like like my parents took care of that, but like in doing a lot of research, like a lot of the healthcare systems, like they don't like cover the whole therapy. And I'm like, what does that, like, that's basically the same thing. Like, how is that not included? So like that needs to change, like all of these things. I'm just like writing it down and submitting them to like Congress people and unions and all of
amazing,
this stuff.
Amazing.
I mean, yeah, it's, I never thought I would be doing this, but it's mandatory in order to graduate, and I'm having the time of my life doing it.
Good.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's just, what an industry that we're in. What have we done to ourselves? It's okay.
We just like performing, and then it comes back to the baggage. Yeah.
And that's what I like. That's totally like what I said too. Like, all we're trying to do is like help other people be happy. Mm-hmm, yet mm-hmm. other people are gonna tear us down, like,
yeah,
where does that come in to play? Like, I don't know how that adds up, but whatever. We're gonna continue to make people laugh and talk about SNL and everything like that. We're gonna continue to make people's days. So talk to us about, like, you had this iconic scene a couple of weeks ago where you played it was literally like my favorite thing. You played the iceberg sank the Titanic. First of all, the whole like costume and like the makeup and the getup, like everything about it was absolutely genius. So how does this work? Like, when you, I guess, were you like told that you were gonna do like a skit about an iceberg who sunk the Titanic, or like,
I mean, for Weekend Update pieces, a lot of the times it's like whoever is on, it's like their thing. This was kind of the case, but it was Anna Dresden's idea. She's one of the head writers. She's a genius.
Oh my god!
And she's written so many incredible things. But she texted me in February. She was like, you know, maybe for the April 10th show. Because the sinking of the Titanic was April 14th. She's like, maybe for the April 10th show, because it'll feel topical. Because you kind of always want to be a little topical when you go on Weekend Update, especially when it's a new character. They're like, maybe for the show. So she texted me in February, being like, maybe for the April 10th show, you come on as the iceberg that sank the Titanic, and you're wearing like this dumb iceberg costume, and you're like, and you're really standoffish, and you're like, I don't want to talk about that, like. And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard. but sure, let's revisit it in April. We both have like busy weeks. And so I let that rest. And then the April 10th show comes along, and then it's Monday. It's the Monday of that week. And then I was like, oh, right. There was that idea that Anna had. And I texted her. I was on set for Nora from Queens, but then I was in between setups, and I was just like, oh, let me text Anna and just be like, do you want to do this? And so I texted her, hey, was that iceberg idea you texted me about a couple months ago real? Like, do you want to try and do it? She was like, oh my god, I completely forgot about it. Yeah, why the hell not? Let's try it. Let's see. We were both so people just have to understand that the entire time, both of us were like, this is never going to make it on TV. It's too crazy. Not that it was too crazy, but it was just like, no one's gonna, like, what is this gonna look like? Like,
oh my god,
how is this gonna, like, is there any, like, is, like, where is this gonna go? And so we were both like, okay, you know what, let's just have fun with it. Oh, but another thing I should say too is that Anna was on my college improv group.
No way.
And yeah, and then she was like, she was 2 years above me, and then she graduated, and then she was doing stuff around the city, and we would go to see each other's shows, we would book each other.
Oh my god.
She and I would like be in shows where we would play crazy characters. Like, she would play like a robot who, like, you know, was a mom. Like we would just put on these really terrible costumes and be like, I'm an old Hollywood actress who like is like, it was just like such like wild, like, because the stakes were so low back then that we could try anything.
Uh-huh.
And truly, she and I like did this iceberg thing. And by the way, I'll fast forward to the end of the week after we did it on Saturday. We met each other in the halls. I was just like, oh my god, that was so fun. And I was like, thank you for writing that with me, for like coming up with the idea. And she was like, no, like, thank you. Like, it felt like something that I would have done, like, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
On like the like indie circuit of just like going to like little bar basement shows, and like a character that we would have done like way back in the day. Because now it's like, the longer time you spend at SNL, the more the value systems of that place kind of like creep into your brain, and the more you're like, oh, we could never do that. Like, that's too out there. That's too crazy.
Right.
And I think we kind of like succumb to that in the beginning of the week where we were just like, this is never going to be good. Like, there's no way like they're going to let us do this. So we wrote it, and then all we wrote in the script was he wears a little iceberg costume, and we didn't know what it would look like.
Stop
and then we,
it.
So then we wrote that on Tuesday, and then Wednesday we did it at the table read, and it went okay. People liked it. And a lot of writers specifically texted us. They were like, that iceberg thing was great. I hope it makes it.
But I think there was
also like the sense that like from the people who worked there, they were just like, how is this going to work? Like, what is this going to look like?
Right.
And so then Thursday and Friday, we don't hear back from the producers. And normally they let you know at some point in the week, especially Thursday and Friday, like it's going to go, like your weekend update piece is going to go into the dress rehearsal show. Oh, we didn't hear anything at all. So then Friday night, at that point, I was like, okay, it's done. Like, it's not going to be in the show. That's too bad. And so then I texted Anna. I was like, well, RIP to the iceberg. Like,
oh no.
Maybe we try it again next year. Like, you know, who knows? And like, but anyway, that was a fun time. I was like, I really loved working on that with you. She was like, me too. Like, it was just a fun, crazy, kooky time. And we just made each other laugh. And that's always the goal. And then right. Friday at midnight, Lorne Michaels does this meeting with like the producers and the head writers. And then at midnight, Colin Jost texts me and he's like, hey, I think we're going to try the iceberg thing.
Yes. Oh my God.
So but normally you have plenty of time to prepare. And we had a whole whole costume we had to think up. And so me and Anna are texting each other until like 1 a.m. Friday night. For the next day to be like, okay, so let's do this for the costume, and we should have a headpiece that looks like this. And she was like, do you want like a white leather bomber jacket, or do you want a white leather motorcycle jacket, or do you want like a blazer? And I was like, I think it should be a blazer,
right?
Because it's more understated. Because if we come out in the leather jacket, then you kind of the audience might know that it's already like a pop star or something, and we wanted that to be a reveal. So we made all these little mini decisions, and I was like, I should have like a white face with like blue like undertones, like blue highlight.
Sure.
We were like doing all this stuff like Friday night, and then we were we'll do a rewrite table and during the day with all the writers. So then on Saturday,
the day of the show,
we're rewriting it. We're taking pitches, me and Anna. And so dress rehearsals at 8, and they normally weekend update needs changes like to the scripts by like 7. And so me and Anna are just sitting together in this small room, like masks on, just like going through each page, moving huge chunks.
Oh my God.
Like completely restructuring it into like 7:20. Like we were like 20 minutes over the deadline, like 40 minutes before the show.
Right.
Before the dress rehearsal show, just making these huge changes. And I was running downstairs to the costume department to check on the headpiece and the costume. And then they were like, do you want more sequins? Do you want more, you know, stoning on the blazer? I was like, sure. I mean, it was just such a crazy rush.
Yeah.
And I felt the entire time I was like, this is going to fail. I was like, this is coming together too haphazardly. I was like, I normally need more time than this. And then when Anna and I were writing the pages down, like right before the show started, we were just like, there were just moments we were both very stressed out, and she had a really stressed. She had a lot of other sketches that she was working on, and then we both just looked at each other multiple times, just bursting out laughing, being like, "What are we doing? Like this is crazy. No way is this going to be on TV. Like this is so like thrown together. Like this is so crazy, and it's like 10 pages long. Normally weekend update pieces are like 7. We were like, this is so long. Like there's every reason. We're giving this every reason to get cut. And then we did it at dress rehearsal, and then it like people laughed. We were like, oh, okay, that kind of worked.
Yeah.
And then we did it at the air show, the live show.
Yeah.
And then it like,
it was a hit.
And then I was like, I couldn't believe how on board the audience was.
Oh my God.
Like me, like if you watch that back, like I'm truly like in the back of my mind, like I'm truly surprised that people are like people get it.
Right.
Because truly like the entire week we were just like, people aren't going to get it. And I don't know why we underestimated the audience in that way. But like, and like a lot of people at the show, like, well, like that's the concern, right? Is they tell you, you know, let's make it, let's, let's, let's change it in a way that makes the audience understand it better. And like, that's what you're concerned with all the time. And so then the fact that it like went over the way it did is like such a surprise, like a delight to me.
Right.
But anyway, it's such a long story, but that's
everything that I could ever ask for, because honestly, like when you watch the video, like, okay, first of all, anyone who hasn't seen it, like stop listening and like go watch Bo and Yang is the iceberg who sunk the Titanic, because it's iconic and you should watch it. And it's like comedy gold. But like also like when I watched it, you totally like you would not be able to know that like all of this was happening minutes before. Like you looked calm as a cucumber. Not like like you totally like pulled it off and it was amazing. And you were totally like confident, and that's what like made it. And honestly, I had no clue, but I was totally on the side of the iceberg, first of all. Like honestly, like hello, she was just like kind of chilling there.
I was just sitting there. I was just chilling.
Yeah, she's just chilling, and like you bumped into me, so there's no need for everyone to attack you. And then the fact that you were just like plugging your like music career, like pop off. That's amazing.
I'm working on new projects. Let me talk about the new stuff.
Right. Things are happening. Okay. Things are happening, and like I'm famous for other reasons. And I'm not just the iceberg who sunk the Titanic. No, it's incredible. It's everything that like you ever wanted. No, seriously, like it was like it's just like those ideas that are just like, who thinks of these? Like, who is the genius who like just randomly comes up with these? And it's Bowen Yang and
Anna Dresden too.
Right. Yeah. So that's incredible. So is that like usually like what the week of an SNL performer is?
Yeah.
And writer?
I mean, my there's this other writer who's one of my best friends, Sudi Green, and she sums it up really well. She's like, you know, the goal is, and it doesn't always work. And like people, you know, are very vocal about like when something is bad and they're like, that sucked and whatever, but right. Which is great, which is part of the SNL, like, you know, experience. But like, she was saying, like, you know, it is the end product is hopefully something where we're having a lot of fun, where whoever's on screen is having a lot of fun, but the lead up to it is just so high pressure for whatever reason. It's like, because you're getting a lot of people sort of, you know, breathing down your necks, telling you like this won't work unless this happens. And it's just like, but that's the great thing about SNL too, is that for most of it, you're given a lot of autonomy and you're given a lot of agency to like do your own thing and people leave you alone. But in the back of your head, you're always thinking, oh, I wonder if this will work in the way that I want it to because of all these limitations. And so it's a lot of pressure in order to create something that makes it look like it's effortless. You know, does that make sense?
Absolutely. And
it takes a village. Absolutely. But that's like what all like showbiz is, right? It's like,
especially live. Especially live shows.
With theater, yeah, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, it's everything changes literally night by night. Exactly. But like at the same time, like your entire show is changing night by night. So like I couldn't imagine like SNL and just like being in that.
Well, there's so much crossover between Broadway and SNL. Like a lot of our dressers are Broadway dressers. A lot of the costume people are the work on Broadway. It's like it's there's so much crossover. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. Well, my God, I love that so much. I had no clue until like, okay, let's get into it. I've been listening to Las Culturistas, right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize like how big of like how much you liked theater. In musical theater. Like I was, first of all, your Ben Platt episode. Iconic.
He was so good.
Yes. Wait, so how long have you been doing Las Culturistas? Like 5 years?
5 years. Yeah, it's been a while.
Oh my
it's
God.
It's been a long time.
Every episode is a dream. They have the best segments. And you're just like laughing the whole time and like smiling. And they have like the best guests on too. Like I said, Ben Platt, Taylor Trench, who was on Take a Bow.
Oh my God.
Molly Taylor. Gordon. Oh my God. Taylor's a dream. All of the Evan Hansen.
Molly's a dream.
Yes. Oh my God. They're the best. I love them all so much. I was in like, did you see that like summer camp thing that Ben and Molly did together? Yeah, I was in that like little
YouTube
video.
Oh, great. Oh, my God.
It's hilarious. They're so funny. They tried to be like, for those who like didn't see it, they tried to be like camp counselors and like teach a bunch of kids like a musical theater camp, basically, and just were absolutely like terrible counselors. So like they were making fun of like acting camps, basically, and it was amazing and everything that you wanted. But literally these episodes, first of all, how did this whole thing come about? Like, what made you like want to start it? The name is amazing. Like, what was that? What inspired that?
Oh my God. Matt and I like were like friends in college. He was on the sketch group. I was on the improv group.
Okay.
And then we were in the sketch group together after college too. And then we were just performing a lot together. And then at one point I there was this small independent, but now they've really grown and they're wonderful. This network called Forever Dog. And they reached out to me when they were just starting out. They were like, would you want to do a podcast? Do you have any ideas? I was like, sure. Here are these ideas. But like I said, like I'm always more comfortable with someone on stage next to me. And so I was like, can I do it with my friend Matt?
Right.
Like, sure. They're like, sure. We love him. Cause they had seen him perform too, or they had performed with him. Cause the people who ran the podcast were also performers. Okay. Anyway, but we pitched them all these ideas that were really high concepts, like a choose your own adventure podcast or like a competition podcast for like, you know, who could be America's Next Top Podcast, like really like
dumb,
but very complicated ideas at the same time. And then they were like, no, try something more low concept.
Sure.
And then Matt was just, it was Matt's idea to just be like, let's just make it like a general pop culture podcast where we talk about anything we want, like whether it's current, whether it's not current, whatever. I was like, okay, sure. And then what would it be called? And he was like, Las Culturistas, like fashionistas, but for culture. And I was like, oh, okay. And then, the network people got back to us. They were like, do you have any segments? Like we kind of want like in the pitch, like segments for people to do. And we were just like, how about one called I Don't Think So, Honey, where, because there was something that me and Matt said to each other all the time, like as friends, we were like, I don't think so, honey, like what you're doing right now, like, I don't think so, honey. Like it would just be right. Like, it was just this like vernacular that he and I shared. And so we were just like, let's like make that a segment. And then it became like a 1 minute thing that we do at the end of the show where it's just a structured rant, nothing complicated. I mean, the whole thing was so simple that I was just like, I don't think this is gonna work. Like there's not enough here. And then, but I think the reason why we've done it for so long is because it is low concept, because there's not that much work that goes into it that we can just sort of like plug in and play every week. And like, I mean, it's just a very easy but still like fulfilling thing. And then like we still get to try out like dumb bits, and we still get like, I get to like hone in on like what like a sensibility is, like what I'm bringing to like other places. So it's really great, and I'm really happy that it's just in my life.
Yeah, and it's doing amazing. I mean, like so many people like know about it. Like I was texting my friends about it, and I was like, you would love this podcast. And they were like, oh, I've been listening to it. And
oh,
I was
like, my God.
Oh, wow. I was like, I'm late to the game. I'm so
No, not at all. No.
But honestly, like, it is so funny. And it's out every Wednesday
with a
new episode. So tomorrow, so yesterday, because you guys will be listening to this on a Thursday. So yesterday, they just came out with a new episode. So go check that out. And it's on all platforms where you find that. But I mentioned, so like I obviously listened to the Ben Platt episode, and of course I went through the Broadway episodes first because I'm obsessed.
That's your neighborhood.
That's my hood. And just hearing how much like you loved theater and everything like that, like would you ever consider doing theater or anything like that?
Oh.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
My God, I would think about it. It's just, but that is its own crazy schedule. In some ways, it's even more grueling than SNL. I mean, and I just have like nothing but respect for people who do it like on that level.
Right.
Like, I don't know, like the 8 shows a week thing or however many it is. Like, I'm just so excited that it's coming back. And like, I will wear every layer of PPE as long as I get to sit in the theater and watch theater. I don't care that I have to wear a mask. I'm like, I just want to be there. I just want to like, I just miss watching it so much.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know that I would do it. I'm just so scared. You know who I was talking to? And I don't think she'd be upset if I shared this, but like, you know, I don't know, like we were blocking a sketch and I was, me and Kate McKinnon were just sort of like standing there and just talking, and then theater came up, and then I was like, you have to do theater at some point, right? She was like, no. I was like, what do you mean? She was like, I'm not as talented. She was like, I don't have like truly, like all of us think that like Broadway people are like otherworldly and their talent and in their work ethic that we're just like, we could never like even deign to dream to do that. But like, I disagree with Kate. I think Kate would be amazing. I just think I have to like, I don't know as much theater as I should is also the thing. I didn't really grow up watching it that much because my parents just didn't know about it. And I wouldn't be taken to see it and stuff. So I'm playing a lot of catch up.
I mean, and it. I also, right. And I mean, I can't obviously like speak for it, but I can't imagine that there's like as much theater in New York as there is in Quebec and Colorado and stuff like that. Like, is there?
Not really. I mean, like in Denver, we would get like some tour shows, but like,
yeah. So you have a pass.
I was always so jealous of the kids even who grew up in Denver who'd be like, yeah, we're going to New York in the summer and we're gonna see all these shows, and they'd be like, oh, I want to do that. I mean, one time when Wicked first came out, I was in high school and we did a trip to New York to look at colleges for my sister who was 2 years older than me, and we came to New York and Broadway tickets were too expensive for my parents. They didn't want to, that we didn't know what TKTS was. Like we didn't go that route. And so,
sure.
And so then, but all I did was we did two things that I had to do. We did an NBC studio tour at 30 Rock because I loved SNL so much.
And I loved
Conan O'Brien. And Conan O'Brien used to have his late night with Conan O'Brien there. So I saw those, I went to those two studios. They were empty because it was in the summer and no one was there. But that was amazing. And the other thing that I demanded do was drive to the Gershwin Theater and just so I could stand at the doors of Wicked and be like, this is where they do Wicked. And like, I didn't have like the access to theater that I wish I did, but like just being near it meant something to me. And yeah, that was just like a silly like teenage Bowen memory that I have still.
Oh my God, stop. I love that so much. The fact that you just like drove to see the
to see
of the theater.
I know. Isn't that so stupid?
Was Wicked your first Broadway show that you saw?
I didn't end up seeing it. I just wanted to see the theater. But the first Broadway show I saw was when I moved to New York for college, and it's so random. The first Broadway show I saw was Xanadu.
Right.
It was Carrie Butler and Cheyenne Jackson. But I forget who was Kira, the lead. And then they had the understudy for Cheyenne. And so, but I got to see Maria Testa and Jackie Hoffman. Yes. And I was like, this is so fun. And they made jokes about Gypsy. They made jokes about Gypsy, which was playing next door. And I was like, this is incredible. But then ever since then, I'm really proud of, like, I'm looking at my playbills right now. Like, I've got a bunch of them. Like, I really like, I'm late to the Broadway sort of like train, but I'm like, sure. I'm on it for life, you know. Like I just love it so much.
My god, it's a dream. You there's nothing that ever like compares to live theater.
No,
like really,
no.
And even like my friend Sydney Lucas and I, who was the original like co-host. Yes, she co-hosts this with me for like the first like however many episodes, like
amazing.
The first like 40, I think, and. She and I obviously went to see SNL, and that was totally like a night at the theater, just without songs.
Yeah, right?
Like, it
just
was like
songs.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I found that even more like fulfilling and thrilling, because you see this set being built as you're about to like watch something. Like, you're not just, it's not like these effortless things. You see like how each thing really works when you go to SNL, and I loved that aspect of it. Like, they really weren't hiding anything from you, and I thought that was like the coolest experience.
It is cool, because I guess for Broadway, for most Broadway shows, they are trying to like not make you see the technical mechanical aspects of it,
right?
But they're so important, though. And sometimes I do want to know, like, how does the bubble machine work on Wicked? Like, how does this work? You know, like, all of that.
That's what I'm saying. And, like, listen, like, all of the theaters on Broadway were old movie theaters. Like, all of them. So, like, they're honestly, like, trying to keep that whole, like, movie aspect where it's just, like, an effortless story that's being brought to you. But, like, really... chaos is going on backstage, literally. So, and they just like try to like keep it like super chill and kind of like hush hush, and like no one ever like thinks of it unless you're like in the industry or like you notice this like stunning part of the show where you're just like, oh my god, I want to know how that works. And honestly, like, I feel like that's why people who go to the theater are just kind of like, oh my god, I want to do that, instead of oh my god, I want to help make that, you know?
Sure.
And
totally.
so like that's where like SNL, I was like, oh my god, I want to help like make that in a way. Like, that was just an aspect that's like not seen, and I love that.
Yeah, you're so right. I wonder if things would have been different if I had seen something, maybe not SNL exactly, but seen something where they were very open about showing you the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
Because I think that, I mean, like, you know, like, you, like, you've been on like TV sets too. It's like most of the time you're there, you're spending like watching like how the cameras are set up and how like how many people it takes just to like make one thing happen. And it's just like, oh, that is like such hard, intense, satisfying work. And like, if people like knew the particulars of this, like, there, I think there would be like a better funnel into like someone like in their development being like, oh, I want to do that thing instead, because that is, I don't have to like think about like how I'm standing and like how I'm saying a line.
Exactly.
It's, like, it's a different skill set. Yeah.
So what, again, what an industry that we've put ourselves
into.
We love this industry, though.
Yes.
Well, I mean, listen, I've taken up more than enough of your time. We're
at the hour
mark already. We haven't even talked about Nora from Queen. Okay, let me ask you a Nora from Queen question.
Yes.
And then I'll let you go. Let's see. So you are currently doing double duty. I mean, well, did you just wrap up doing season?
We just wrapped.
Okay.
We just wrapped season two.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my god. I can't imagine. So, like, in a way, you're, like, doing triple duty because of, like, the whole podcast thing you have going on, too. You're just, like, an icon in all aspects of the industry.
No.
We love it. Like, how do you – okay, first of all, let's talk about Edmund, because he's a king, and he's absolutely hilarious.
Oh, my god. He's like
Awkwafina's cousin. Oh, my god. I can't. And the scene where you, like, see your uncle's – something
penis,
that maybe I
something.
Shouldn't say.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, right.
Okay, great.
No,
great.
It's okay.
It.
You said it for me. I love it. That is just like, it was, I was on the floor, like just rolling. First of all, talk about Edmund and talk about the antics of Nora from Queens, and also like how you keep up with like doing all of these amazing projects.
Oh my God. I mean, I love that. That's so nice, Eli.
Yeah.
Edmund is like the person I would have become if I had like denied myself like what I wanted to do.
Right.
To like, you know, perform and do comedy. But like, he's someone who is very like repressed and is very like driven by like, you know, success in like a very techie, like capitalist, like I want money way.
Yes.
And he's in constant competition with Nora until they have to like come together and like figure some stuff out together, because like they're a team all of a sudden, because Nora gives Edmund this great idea for an app. And then it was just really fun to like find that character with Nora, who like at this point is just like she's an award-winning actress, and it's like she knows what she's doing. And I'm like, every time I like do something with her, I would like learn something new. And she's just like so like patient and generous and like is present with you. And so, I mean, I don't know. It was actually really nice to go from SNL and then on my breaks from SNL, from that pace, go to something
that
was structured differently, like a scripted sitcom, and just like using the skill set and changing it just a little bit. I'm very like, I still need to like recover a little bit, 'cause it's been a lot of work, but
yeah.
But it's just so much fun. And like and then, you know, we wrapped on the season a couple weeks ago in LA, and she and I like, she shared a moment with me. She was just like, you know, like keep doing what you're doing. And like, it was just like a very, like, I mean, just to like get her like sort of advice on stuff was just like,
sure,
the best. And it's a fun show. It goes down easy. It's really silly.
Yes.
It's not quite as dumb as John Glazer Loves Gear, but it's
nothing can compare. Nothing can compare.
But it's really fun. And like, I'm so lucky that I'm able to like do these multiple things at the same time, so that I'm learning from both, and I'm learning what to appreciate in both. And like now I know, like, because if you're stuck at one thing for too long, then you kind of think that this is what the industry is like everywhere.
Right.
It's never the case. You know, every project has its own identity, has its own way of making you work and think and all that stuff.
Right. And it's a great way to like keep things fresh, right?
Yeah.
Like just keep you on your toes and just like appreciate each thing that you're doing, you know, in a way. Because doing the 100%. Same thing over and over again can kind of get dry.
Of course. Always.
But it's always like, honestly, like in this industry at the same time, it's like you never feel that, because it's never the same, you know? But
it's never the same.
Yeah. It's fun. It's great times. Bowen, you're a great time. I'm obsessed
you
with
are
this.
Eli.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for like giving me the time to like come on and talk. And like, yeah, it was great
pleasure.
To catch up with you. All of the things.
I know, I haven't seen you in so long.
I know. It literally was the last time. I think it was last year, because it was still like pandemic. Like when just before we all needed to start wearing masks at SNL.
Yeah.
So like it
uh-huh,
was like
yeah.
it was pre-pandemic, but like at the same
just
time like
getting just... up. It was like either like December of 2019 or January, February 2020 that you guys
right.
that you and Sydney came, and it was
yes.
so fun. I fangirled out at Sydney. I was like, oh my God. I didn't realize until like after she like left for me, I was like, wait, I saw you in Fun Home. And I just, she's incredible.
Yes, you totally did. It was the highlight. And it was so funny because she tells the story when she was like hosting all the time. We tell this story where I was like fangirling over Kenan Thompson, because I'm obsessed
God,
with the
best.
Original Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
And so then you like came out and you were like fangirling over Sydney and everything.
Yes.
And, like, I was like, it was too funny. What a time. What a
fangirl circle.
Yes. Oh my God. And of course, Sydney was fangirling over Kate McKinnon.
Okay,
she's obsessed with her. She's literally like, that is Sydney's role model. And so like literally everyone was just like, oh my God, I love you.
so cute.
Yes, it was amazing. It was literally like one of the highlights of my life and Sydney's life. We talk about it all the time.
You guys have to come back.
Oh my God. I so want to. I'm so obsessed. I also just like, I can't imagine like doing what you're doing and like with the protocols and everything like that. I can't imagine like the stress and like just like the overall like atmosphere with like the masks and everything like that. Like, yeah. I couldn't imagine just
we're figuring it out.
Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah. Props to like the whole team at SNL, like literally cast, crew, everyone, writers. Cause it takes everyone.
It takes a village. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bowen, your dream. Thank you so much.
Oh my God.
Have a wonderful week. I can't wait because this Saturday, well, first of all, yesterday, a new episode of Las Costarices came out. So go check that out. And of course, this Saturday, my queen, Olivia Rodrigo, is coming on SNL with Key Michael Key, who I did Friends from College with. I'm like,
oh my God.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this week's
episode. Amazing.
Oh my God. It'll be great. I can't wait. I'm so excited. I love you. Thank you so much for doing this. I can't wait for more episodes of Las Culturistas. And yeah, thanks for doing this.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Take a Bow, Bowen Yang. Oh my goodness. Literally one of my all-time favorite interviews on Take a Bow. Bowen truly deserves to take a bow. I mean, he's doing triple duty in jobs right now. Thankfully, that's easing up since Nora from Queens has officially wrapped up for at least his part of season two. All of these exciting things are happening for Bowen. You literally see him in headlines like every week, I feel like, on SNL. He's truly becoming one of the stars of the show. And I think that he really has a future on Weekend Update because he continues to be an amazing show-stopping guest every time he pops up and does like a little skit on Weekend Update. So I know that like Michael Che and Colin Jost are going to be departing SNL soon, I think after this season. And I would love to see him up there as like a news anchor or something like that, because he is so funny and just pulls it off, man. He can pull anything off. And just talking about the week of an SNL performer and how skits work and everything like that and how the writers work and just his journey of becoming a comedian and an actor and then kind of falling into the whole writing thing with SNL. It's just really amazing, and it just proves like the whole, you know, you're gonna be rejected a lot, as he was rejected from UCB and all of these amazing things, and look at him now. Like, he's starring in SNL, he is doing Nora from Queens, he's doing TV shows, and of course this podcast, Las Culturistas. And literally, when I say I'm obsessed with the podcast, like, I'm obsessed with it. It's the only thing I've been consuming for the past like 3 weeks, ever since I knew that like he was gonna be coming on. I had listened to it before, but like it was kind of just like, oh, I'll listen depending on the guest and everything like that. And I feel like I never really like paid attention to like the show itself. And ever since I really started doing that, I was like, this is amazing. And I want to listen to all the episodes. He has amazing guests on, like I mentioned, Ben Platt, Taylor Trench. He has tons and tons and tons of musical theater, Broadway, and like TV actors and performers. So it's amazing. Go check it out. It's a bunch of like entertainment industry people, but they're talking about current pop culture things. And they kind of talk about like literally all kind of thing cultures, but like in a fun way, in a very light and funny way. And it's just super enjoyable, and I highly recommend it. So Las Culturistas, it's on all platforms that you listen to podcasts and everything like that. This week's episode is with Bianca Del Rio, and that was released yesterday. So go check it out. It's his newest episode. And yeah, it's a great time. I know you all will love it, especially if you loved this interview today. So there are some exciting things happening virtually. I know, obviously, like all of this is exciting, and like Broadway's coming back and everything's happening. But we also have like a lot of fun virtual things to look out for until then. So we're going to start off, and just like a friendly little reminder here that High School Musical, the musical, the series is going to be having their season 2 premiere tomorrow, Friday, May 14th. I'm so excited for it. You're going to be able to see Andrew Barth Feldman, who was a Take a Bow guest, Joey Serafini, who was a Take a Bow guest, Roman Banks, who was in Dear Evan Hansen and was the first person of color to play Evan Hansen. So he's going to be joining this season, as well as Andrew Barth Feldman. And we're going to see all of our favorite people. So I'm very excited for that. We also have something excited to look out for on Friday, which is Breathe, a new musical. And this is literally going to be like a on-demand, like full, like performance, I guess. Obviously it was filmed. So that's hence the on-demand, but like, it's going to be out there until July 2nd. So you'll have time if you can't do it like this week or this weekend or whatever it may be. But anyways, let's get into what Breathe is and who is in the cast. The cast is star-studded, and Tony winners Kelly O'Hara and Brian Stokes Mitchell, Patty Murin, Danae Benton, Matt Doyle, Max Clayton, all of these amazing performers that we all love to see are going to be performing in this new musical. Breathe chronicles COVID-19's impact on 5 very different relationships, with each couple's story told by a different songwriter and a team of directors. So it's a very fascinating new project that is still very new, obviously, as they talk about like the current times with COVID and everything like that. And it's cool that it's going to be virtual, because it's really going to have that COVID impact and just have that background and everything like that. It's going to be really, really cool. And I'm really looking forward to it. So if you can, the tickets are $25. It's going to be amazing, I swear to God. And it starts May 14th, this Friday, tomorrow. And you can watch it until July 2nd. So you have time if you don't want to do it yet. But definitely something to look into. And the last very exciting event we have going on this weekend is actually going to be taking place on Sunday, May 16th. It's 2021's annual Miscast, which is going to be premiering on YouTube. And it's a free broadcast that like literally features all of our favorite Broadway stars who we've talked about it before will be performing songs that they normally wouldn't be singing on like a Broadway stage. And they can kind of, this allows them to have a space that they're able to perform whatever song that kind of like speaks to them or whatever number speaks to them. And something that's not like a stereotype that you would be casted in, because Broadway has some typecasting going on, which is no secret to the industry or the public eye by any means. So this really gives them a space for that. And it's very exciting. I love Miscast. I love to see what people do and how they pull it off. Obviously, like we talked about it before with Joshua Colley, him, Luca Padovan, and Douglas Baldeo did the Schuyler Sisters, and it was amazing. So it's just like things like that. So definitely check that out. It's going to be the second time that it's going to be online, because it is an annual event. So they want to continue it even through COVID times. So definitely check it out. It's free on YouTube this Sunday. Let's turn it over to Eli's entertainment experience, because this week we're going to talk a little bit about something that Bowen and I had talked about, but really glanced over. So in this week's Triple E segment, we're going to talk about John Glazer Loves Gear. So John Glazer Loves Gear is the TV show that Bo and I did together a couple years ago. So I was in season one of this show that I literally fell in love with filming, because it combined my two loves of sports and doing like acting and telling stories and doing TV and film and being able to like perform. So in this show, it's very odd, because I am in almost every episode of both season one and season two. However, I'm the kid whose face is blurred out the entire time. It's a very odd storyline, especially for my character. And it's just like just the goofiest show. It's a lot of improv, which is obviously like Bowen's background that we talked a lot about. So he enjoyed doing that. He came along in season two as the sports expert, because his first sports expert, who was like this huge jock and like super, super strong, like his muscles, like he was practically like a bodybuilder. He's just like super strong and like knows very manly, I guess you could say, very masculine. Then he kind of like goes away. and something happens to him, which you'll have to watch to find out. And then Bowen is introduced in season two as the new spurt, the sports expert. And he's this rather feminine sports expert who, like, kind of knows what he's talking about, but also at the same time, it's kind of like John Glazer, who the show is about. John Glazer loves gear, kind of telling him more about, like, the sports equipment and all of these fun things that he's interested in that he shared with his spurt, but now it's now like a odd relationship. And I play John's son. And so Bowen and I and John, we have a ton of scenes together. It's always the best time on set. And it's so hard not to like laugh because a lot of it is not scripted. And it's kind of just like, you know, you have lines and you have like this base, but really they're trying to get you out of it and kind of doing some new things. So just being on the set and learning, I've never done improv before or anything like that. So that was another thing that was really cool on top of like the whole sports and everything and like the cool places that I got to see and the fun things that I got to do in the show. But also like being surrounded by a show that does just improv and kind of having fun and just being silly. It was something that was even cooler because improv has always fascinated me because it's really just having a conversation, but like, it's really just, it's amazing how like fast people work, even though like it's just a conversation, like all conversations are improvised. So it's really interesting when you really think about it and you like dive deep into it. But literally Bowen is hilarious on the show. Go check it out. If you haven't, it's on True TV. John Glazer loves gear. It's so funny. It's really bizarre, the storyline, and you really won't see me even though you'll hear me, and like kind of see you'll see my body, just not my face. So you may not recognize me, but you could probably recognize my voice. And Bowen's hilarious on it. As I mentioned before, John Glazer is also hilarious on it, and it's a fabulous show. It just makes fun of people that are like obsessed with like sports. So it's really fun. Go check it out. I wish we could have had more time on the podcast. We had already went over an hour to really talk about it with Bowen. And but yeah, so I figured I'd talk a little bit about it in this segment. It's a very bizarre concept, a very bizarre show, a very bizarre role for me. But it was always a blast. And that's how Bowen and I met. So it's only fitting that I share that story. The first day of rehearsal, he was kind of like asking me, he was kind of like, oh, do you know like any of these sports terms? And I was like, oh yeah, like this one's this and this one's this. And he was like, oh my God, like, wow, like that's crazy. And like, that's literally like how we met. And then ever since then, we've kind of like hit it off and stayed in touch. And we had a blast filming this one this week, and it was great to see him again. I was glad I was able to get him on just to not only talk about SNL, but get a new side of the entertainment industry, get an actor to his caliber. He's a pretty big name. So I'm very excited to have him on the show, and I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode. So I'm going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you all for listening to episode 51 of Take a Bow. Episode 52 is coming out next week with the one and only Natalie Weiss, and I'm so excited for it. It's going to be another great episode. I will be recording it this week, and I'm very excited for it. So stay tuned, and I hope to see you all next week. We have another exciting guest on top of this week's, and it's going to continue the one-year anniversary celebration of Take a Bow podcast. So thank you all, and I hope to see you all next week. Have a good week, everyone. For this episode's curtain call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dory Berenstain, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow is Tessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take a Bow Podcast. Take a Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.